Let's turn to the Bible, Isaiah chapter 52, verse 13, but that will automatically then lead us on into Isaiah 53. Last verses of Isaiah 52 then. See, my servant will act wisely, says God. He will be raised and lifted up and highly exalted. Just as there were many who were appalled at him, his appearance was so disfigured beyond that of any man, and his form marred beyond human likeness. So will he sprinkle many nations, and kings will shut their mouths because of him. For what they were not told, they will see, and what they have not heard, they will understand. Who has believed our message? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering, like one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows. Yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him. And by his wounds we are healed. We all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before his shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, and who can speak of his descendants? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was stricken. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life a guilt offering, he will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. After the suffering of his soul, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. For he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors. How often do you see something unreasonable being the wisest option? Well, maybe I'm exaggerating there, but for example, in chess, you're supposed to take your opponent's pieces, and yet there are certain gambits where you sacrifice some of your main pieces and win the game when the opponent gobbles them up. You set a trap, sacrifice, and lo and behold, you have won the game. It seems illogical to give away your queen, but you can do it and win the game because of it. Sometimes if you're in a maze and you want to go in one direction, you need to start by going in the opposite direction. It seems silly, but it's the only way to go. Sometimes that's the way to do it. One of my favorite stories as a kid was of the Middle Eastern patriarch who had three sons, and in his will he left half of them to one son, one quarter of them to another, and one eighth to another. The trouble was there were only seven camels, so what were they going to do? So they call out their wise uncle, and he laughs and he comes and he lends them one of his camels. So they're now eight. So four goes to one, two go to another, one goes to another, and there's one over, so he takes his camel back. You see, giving up something in order to solve a problem. It seems illogical, but it works. Worldly wisdom is sometimes inadequate because we don't know enough about the situation. So sometimes the death of Jesus can seem just like that. A funny way to go about things. Now, Geoffrey Rust has a poem called Notes for a Biography. When Jesus went to Bethlehem, I must say it was odd. I wouldn't have been born that way if I was being God. And when Jesus went to Nazareth, he spent 20 years in trade. Now that's hardly a career in which messiahs will be made. When Jesus picked his followers, a practice I could tell, he was plainly inexperienced at hiring personnel. And when Jesus wandered Palestine, it was awfully hit and miss. You'll never reach your customers with marketing like this. When Jesus worked a miracle, you don't need a degree to know that healing on the Sabbath will annoy a Pharisee. And when he went to Jerusalem, he rode there on an ass. What a PR opportunity, and Jesus just let it pass. When he went to Gethsemane, the game was not yet up. There was time for him and Judas to kiss and make it up. When Jesus stood in Pilate's house, he didn't realize that politics is all about the art of compromise. When Jesus went to Calvary, that's the ending of the story. One more tragic hero, death instead of glory. He must have been mad. That's the only way I understand it. When Jesus went to Calvary, you'd almost think he'd planned it. Well, I like that one anyway. Martin Joseph has a song, Strange Way to Start a Revolution. Strange Way to Show Your Business Plan. Strange Way to Reassure Your Mother. Strange Way to Finish Your World Tour. Strange Way to Pose for Countless Paintings. Strange Way to Gather in the Poor. Strange Way. A strange way to go about doing things. To be crucified. But that's the way Jesus chose. The surprise of it, I think, is well brought out in the Street Bible version of the first few verses. Who would credit it? Who'd have foreseen this plot line in God's liberation story? He grew up vulnerable as a sapling in a concrete yard. Not specially attractive. Nothing particularly regal about him. He didn't stand out in a crowd. You're Mr. Average. He was dissed by most, given the cold shoulder by many. There was a sadness about him. You could see in his face. He was on a personal terms with grief. People blocked him out. Verbally abused him. Didn't rate him. Strange way to start a revolution. So let's take a look at the first few verses in our chapter, in our passage, verses 13 of chapter 52, right through to verse 3 of chapter 53. No fanfares, no marketing. No wonder he was rejected. He doesn't become a celebrity by advertising. When he heals people, he tells them not to talk about it. Modern publicity for revivals is now online with live links and all sorts of things. Jesus just didn't do it that way. No personality cult here. He was quiet, wise, but on the whole rejected. We've been working our way through these chapters of Isaiah. When we were back in Isaiah 45, verse 22 just says, turn to me and be saved, all you ends of the earth, for I'm God and there is no other. And when push comes to shove, God says, turn to me and be saved. He asks us to look upon someone who's not Brad Pitt. Okay? He's not a film star. Ordinary bloke, beaten up, battered, knows all about suffering. Since an early age, I wonder how many of his little friends as a boy died before they reached adulthood. How many funerals did Jesus attend as a young boy of his friends in those times that were harsh with no antibiotics? Difficult days. Used to suffering. Used to being rejected. People were embarrassed by him. People avoided his company. Strange way. Strange way to win a world, isn't it? To send somebody to the back of beyond. And trust me, Roman soldiers didn't get excited when they were posted to Jerusalem. Arrivederci Roma, I guess. Anyway, Jesus lived on the outskirts of empire. in the wilderness, effectively, as far as political life was concerned. If you were going to start a revolution, you wouldn't begin it in Nazareth. You wouldn't. You just wouldn't. There was nothing there to suggest anything was going to happen. Strange way. It's not what you would think intuitively about how God would go about it. I wouldn't do it that way if I were God. But God did. Because God's God. And I'm me. So Jesus, he suffers rejection. But he sees a reason for his pain. Verses 4 to 6. Big problems don't have easy solutions. Big problems have difficult solutions and painful solutions. Big problems, when they're solved, hurt someone. We only see it part solved ourselves. But when God does things, big problems have big solutions. And difficult to understand, Billy Joel, the rock musician, writer, said this: I wasn't raised Catholic, but I used to go to Mass with my friends, and I viewed the whole business as a lot of very enthralling hocus-pocus. There's a guy nailed to a cross and dripping blood, and everyone's blaming themselves for that man's torment. But I said to myself, forget it. I had no hand in that evil. I have no original sin. There's no blood of any sacred martyr on my hands. I pass on all of this. That's his take on it. And you think, Billy, how well do you know yourself, mate? You only think that because you haven't met God yet. Take Mark Twain, who has another view of it. He says this: I'm constructed, in 1900 he wrote this, or said this in a speech, I'm constructed like everybody else and enjoy a compliment as well as any other fool, but I do have another side. I have a wicked side. Estimable friends who know all about it would tell you and take a certain delight in telling you things that I have done and things further that I have not repented. The real life that I live and the real life that I suppose all of you live is a life of interior sin. He said that everyone is a moon, has a dark side, which he never shows to anybody. Billy Joel, you do have a dark side, like all of us. And you don't show it to anybody. Neither do I. But we've got it. And Jesus knows that. Atheists have a huge problem with this. If you read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, or saw the film, at the beginning of it, a girl in a cafe has a way of solving the world's problem without anybody getting crucified. That's the atheist's pipe dream. There is no way to solve the world's problem. Instead, it doesn't happen because the Earth gets demolished to make way for an intergalactic bypass. That's another story. And when you look at it, you see, well, you know, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is written out of an atheist galaxy, a galaxy with no compassion. It only has irony. The only message of the atheist galaxy is to face the pain in a harsh world with irony. That's all they can say. That's all they offer. I have to say, is that the best you can do? Is that the best you can do? Jesus looks at the pain in the world, but he doesn't confront it with postmodern irony. He confronts it with sacrifice and with love, because he knows that only love and sacrifice are strong enough to overcome the afflictions of the world. He's taken our infirmities, he's carried our sorrows, pierced for our transgressions. The punishment brought us peace was upon him. We are healed by his wounds. The Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. The Saviour, suffering Saviour, sees a reason for the pain. And in verses 7 to 9, he shows resignation to the pain. Pressed and afflicted, yet he doesn't open his mouth. I saw a great Clint Eastwood film. Yeah, I'm a bit of a film buff, and I'm actually a bit secret Clint Eastwood fan. And if you watch Clint Eastwood's films down the year, they're all about him being the vigilante, you know, the tough guy, Dirty Harry, and also on, you know, he's a go-on guy, go-on punk, make my day. You got it, you know all the lines. And in this film, he's a wonderful actor. He plays an elderly man. He's an elderly man, and but he plays this tough guy, you know, who's racist and bigoted, and makes friends with these Asian neighbours, and they begin to change him. And there's a gang on the estate, and he goes after them, like the big tough Clint Eastwood forever. And it all goes wrong. And at the end of the film, he confronts them with no weapon at all. And he just allows them to kill him. And by being killed, justice is done. And I'm just sitting there thinking, whoa, Clint, how you've moved on, boy. It's taken you till you're in your 70s, but you finally got there. You've finally seen, you just produced the film, you know, that as a Christian I can say, yes! Offers a sacrifice. Actually, that was a plot spoiler, wasn't it? I just realised. Did I mention the name of the film?
No.
I won't mention the name of the film. It's not as useless, isn't it, really? Anyway, Jesus is born illegitimate. He's born poor. He's called a drunkard. He's called a glutton. They say he's possessed by the devil. He's got nowhere to lay his head. In the end, there's a price on his head. He's afflicted. And he takes it all. He knows that it's going to happen. And then if we move on to verses 10 to 12, he savours the reward for his pain. It's God's will to crush him and cause him to suffer, but God will bring him through it all. Now, isn't that fantastic? He bore the sins of many and made intercession for the transgressors, it said, but it was the Lord's will to crush him. And Jesus is blessed by changing the life of those he came to save. It's the folly of wisdom. It's wisdom beyond reason. It's wisdom that has a special name. The special name for this wisdom is love. It's a love of God big enough to overcome the world and its problems. This is love. This is God's solution for a broken world. This is how God fixes a broken world. This, as Martin Joseph said, this is God's business plan. Who would have thought it? But it is, and God is great.